Chapter 15. When Things Go Wrong. The story, Close Call. We both woke up terrified and knew that we had to rethink this deal. Our desperate search had led us down a tricky path and we felt like we were about to make a major mistake. It was probably naive of me to think I could jump on a plane to visit Florida for my first time, flip a property while there, and fly back to Sweden within 3 months. But that's all the time I had for this venture, so I wanted to try. I landed in Tampa and was greeted by the most amazing woman I had ever met, my soon-to-be wife. She too had dreams of buying properties in Florida and had already started looking when I arrived. We teamed up and got to it, getting to spend almost every day driving around in the sun with the most beautiful woman I knew was a true dream for me. And not only that, there was also a really good market for buying properties, even if that was hard for us to know as first-time buyers in the area. But that buyer's market was soon to end, and as the weeks went by, it got harder and harder to find something better than what we had found yesterday. The low-end properties that had been sitting in the market for several years actually started selling like crazy. Every time we called a realtor, there were already several offers on the property. After months in a market like that, we started to get frustrated with not getting to anything in time. So we began searching for properties that were being sold by their owners, and we found one. It was a house with a big fenced lot that had been zoned for commercial use. This was pretty handy as it allowed you to utilize it in several different ways. The structure on the property was an old single-story house that had been turned into a garage in which the owners had repaired and customized cars. If we were to buy the property, we would get most of the stuff on it as part of the deal. That meant an old camper, a few pickup trucks, tools, engines, and a bunch of random car parts, scrap metal and whatnot. Since I had made bank buying a similar property in Sweden a few years prior, I got intrigued and started negotiating with the sellers. We eventually got them as low as we thought they would go and made up a contract. Our plan was to clean the property, restore the house so that you could live in it again, and then rent out a bunch of parking on the fenced lot. Doing the math, things looked pretty good. We could very likely create a good cash flow, but only after a lot of work. So much work that we both woke up sweaty and scared, realizing that no, we can't do it. We don't have the manpower to undertake such a project, and even though it might create a decent cash flow, there probably wouldn't be much help from the county when it came to getting the permits we would need. This project would take too much time and effort to bring to life, and all that work would not be worth it in the end, especially not with the risk of the county getting involved, slamming their brakes on the whole thing. We cancelled the deal the next day and actually felt great walking away from it. This might sound easy, but walking away after investing so much time and effort can be quite hard at times. We had visited the property 5 or 6 times. We had crawled through every single space and done inventory of all the things that we would be getting with the property, but it was too much. I remember one of the issues being that we would have to go to big car meets and swap, trade, and sell parts in order to get some money back from all the stuff we got with the purchase. This is a job that, in the end, would have taken so much time that our hourly wage would probably have been better flipping burgers at McDonald's. Walking away from something you are so invested in will always be hard, but it is important to have the self-discipline to stop and think, and make sure to think for yourself. You need to feel right about what you do. I remember when a guy we got to know showed us a house he thought we should buy, a very nice property that was in good shape, a little house that had been restored to perfection, for which they were asking $60,000. It didn't need any work and looked great, but had a major flaw. I stood on the street and showed my wife how I thought the house seemed to lean down on the right-hand side. My guess was that there might be a sinkhole under the house. We looked a little closer and sure enough, it's leaning. We asked the guy who brought us. He stepped back, looked at the house and said, No, that's nothing. This is a great house, you guys should buy this one. These are words you would really like to trust, because this guy had made millions flipping houses. He obviously knows what he is doing. A few minutes passed and my wife and I walked off to the side where a local walked by, looked at us and said, "I'd avoid that place if I were you. It's the only sinkhole in town." We walked back to the front, told everybody that we were ready to pack up and got back to our search. We needed to find properties that we felt good about. Properties that this same neighbor that had tried to sell us a sinkhole house suggested we check out. You can read all about that deal in chapter 12. Buying those houses was the start of something big for me. My visit to Florida became more than a visit. My planned flip to buy a property, fix it up and sell it for a profit within 3 months became a much more long-term investment. I ended up with the woman of my dreams and some good cash-flowing properties that we can own for as long as we like. It's a lot better than hauling auto parts halfway across America, which is what we most likely would still be doing if we bought the first place. The story in numbers. The house we were looking at buying had some good numbers to it if our estimates were right, but it came with too much risk and too much work. Asking price, $65,000. Plus making the house habitable, $25,000. Minus potential income from selling all the stuff, minus $20,000. Equals an investment of approximately $70,000. The house would have rented for $10,000. Fenced parking would have brought in an additional $2,000. Total income equaled $12,000 per year. Cost of owning the property per year, insurance $500, property tax $650, maintenance $1,000. The cash flow would, should, could have been approximately $12,000 minus $2,150, equaling $10,850. The cash-on-cash return would, in that case, be around $10,850 divided by $70,000, equaling 0.155 or 15.5%. Not bad in numbers, but very bad in relation to the time and emotions that would have been invested in this deal. The facts. Just as with the chapters of this book, there are several steps to buying and renting properties and things can go wrong on each and every step. However, things going wrong is not only a big part of real estate investing, but also a big part of life. I find learning to deal with challenges often comes down to emotional control. If you learn to control your emotions in times of struggle, you will have a better chance of dealing with those issues logically. Annoying tenants are a good example. They might have an attitude that really frustrates you and they might ask for a lot more than you feel like giving. For me, that would lead to an emotional rejection, which then leads to me being unfair and upset. Tenants who annoyed me made me care even less about them. The problem is that when I ignored them, I got even more issues. The solution? I learned to turn emotions off and did my best to make it work without letting anger, fear, or frustration get in the way. I took a completely logical approach to the problems and started looking for simple ways of moving forward. Step one ended up being firm on only dealing with tenants in text. It would give enough time to digest whatever they fired at me and think of a good response instead of yelling at each other over the phone. I then decided to always do the right thing and leave it at that. If annoying tenants have issues, I figure out whether it's an issue I am responsible for or not. If it is, I fix it. If not, I tell them no. By starting to deal with it in a more professional way, I gained some control back, which felt great. It has led to some tenants moving out, but letting them go and realizing that they are not irreplaceable has been a huge load off my shoulders. In going through this change, I had to fight both fear and anger, which was very hard for me, but it got easier and now I sleep a lot better, at least most of the time. There are still challenges and events that are tough to deal with, but as time goes by, I feel like I'm getting better and better at it. Emotional control is helpful when faced with situations, no matter if it's problematic tenants or events like the one in this chapter's story. I remember being very excited and really wanting to make that first deal in America. But, thankfully, both my wife and I managed to stop, rethink, and choose another path despite the emotional pull to make a deal. Challenges and setbacks will always come your way, and if you give up during these times of being tested, you will have found the only way to lose in real estate. As long as you can keep your head up and have it in you to just keep moving forward no matter how much crap the world throws at you, you are destined to do well. Just keep on trying. The only way to lose is by giving up. The title of this chapter was When Things Go Wrong, not If Things Go Wrong. It is important to know that you will be getting into problems, and only the ones who solve them and move on will win big. Action items. If you are starting to lose hope because you can't find an area to buy a property in, stop, gather strength, and keep on looking. If you are starting to lose hope because you feel like the real estate market is impossible to buy houses in, stop, rethink your strategy, and keep on trying. If you are starting to lose hope because you can't find the right property to buy, stop, gather motivation, and keep on searching. If you're starting to lose hope because you feel like it's impossible to negotiate a good deal, stop, gather confidence, and keep trying. If you are starting to lose hope because you can't figure out how to buy the property you want, stop, gather more knowledge on the subject, and keep on trying. If you are starting to lose hope because you didn't get the financing you need, stop, reread the chapter on financing, and keep trying. If you are starting to lose hope because you can't figure out how to get through all those repairs, stop. Ask someone who knows and keep on working. If you are starting to lose hope because you can't find good tenants, stop. Take some nicer photos. Make a more appealing ad and just know that if you have a nice and clean rental in a good location, tenants will come. If you are starting to lose hope because your tenants are causing trouble, stop. Try to control your emotions and think of logical solutions. Remember that most tenants are good. If you have to go through an eviction, so be it. Over time, the majority of people living in your rental will be good. If you are starting to lose hope because you feel like it's too hard running your business, stop. Take time to go see some professionals and ask for help. If you are starting to lose hope because you feel like it's impossible to find a second house and expand your business, stop. Take time to be grateful for your first house, and then keep searching. If you want to lower the amount of stress that comes with owning properties, always try to keep a buffer that helps you avoid financial troubles if you hit times with tenants that aren't paying or houses that need repairs. I find that a buffer similar to 5% of the property's value is a good start. Per property, that is.